kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
You could sound a little more excited when you introduced me, Joe.
Joining as usual, Cole.
Do you need some of my steroids? Do you need to pep me up?
Yes, I do.
Do you need some meth? Is that, can we say that on the stream? Do we lose our shit?
Well, the town I live in is known for meth, so I wouldn't have a hard time getting any.
Same.
There's 40 people in your town. How many people make meth?
About 38 of them.
Oh, God. That would include some of your family, if math is correct.
Like I said. No.
Well, you're not paying attention. Number three is making meth in the basement.
Number three is savage. Like, she is going to be the one that tears this world apart.
Oh, Jesus.
And then relishes in the ashes.
And how old is number three?
She will be six in 2 weeks.
Oh, God. So, yeah, that's demonic.
She is. That girl is harsh. She told her daddy the other day she was going to draw him in the color green. And he said, but I don't like green. And she said, look, Dad, you get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. And she was just deadpan serious.
Oh, my God.
Have you ever heard number three's voice?
No.
Like when we play, she sounds like not even like Minnie Mouse, like she's super squeaky and soft spoken. But when she says something, you could tell it's serious as shit.
Oh, God.
And it's just like the strangest juxtaposition when it comes to her voice. She's so charming and so adorable, but she will cut you. I don't know where she gets it at.
Gee, I wonder.
He's a squeaky little savage kid. I don't know.
Oh, shit. Well, we have a hell of a show lined up. There is a lot of stuff going on. The Video Game Awards happened last night as of when we are recording. Normally, we record on Thursdays, but it is currently Friday afternoon because of the Video Game Awards, or the Game Awards. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Got to get that name right.
Did you watch them? Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched all except for, like, the first 10 minutes of the pre-show.
Oh, you missed. They brought out Joseph Ferris early. Oh, you said the pre-show. I think I missed the pre-show. I don't know what I was doing.
He was part of the pre-show.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw him. They brought him out early, so that before he had the chance to get all hyped up on whatever he hypes up on.
And he was still hyped up.
And he was still something fierce. Like, he kept turning around to the audience. They're like, no, the camera's over here.
It's like, I love talking to the people, the audience.
But I'm a little sad he wasn't like, by the way, A Way Out 2 coming tomorrow or some shit. Like, he should have just blown the lid off something, because that's what we expect from Joseph Ferris at this point.
I expected a lot more profanity from him.
Yeah. And it was funny, did you watch the after show with Mixer?
No, I didn't.
They mentioned that, you know, he was considerably subdued this time, and they were like, oh, well, he was on one of our shows, and we got graced by the cuss words. So.
Oh, God.
So even on a Mixer program that was like a T-rated stream, he was just letting them fly.
We need him on this show. I don't know how the hell we could make that happen.
How do we get this guy?
He could say fuck all he wants on this show, and it would be amazing.
He'd fit in well. And that his accent juxtaposed with mine. That's my second time saying juxtaposed today.
What is it with you and big words today?
I don't know. I'm very jacked up on steroids. I fucked up my leg again, so I'm very jacked up on steroids.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
I'm not. You're just going to have to put me in bubble wrap and call it a day.
Eventually.
I'd still get a paper cut. It's true.
Anyway, we should probably go through the Game Awards because a lot of stuff happened there.
You know, the terrible part is before we even start, I have to find it in my notes because I have two other pages of notes from news from this week before we even get to the Game Awards shit.
Oh, my Lord.
It's been a hectic week, Joe. We have a lot to talk about.
Look at you taking notes.
I did. Like, I sit here in front of my little... Look, if I've got a nice new computer, I got to put this bitch to work. And I've got notes for days.
Look at you. You have a new computer. You played a game on Steam this week.
I did. It was exciting.
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it, so we won't.
No. Fucking embargoes are hard.
I think we're allowed to say that you played a game on Steam, though.
I did play a game on Steam, and it was so cool to, like, load up Steam and not hear my computer crying into its pillow.
I wish I knew the feeling.
The sad part is, like, I talk about my computer like it's some big beast, but it's not. I got it for $300 off the Facebook Marketplace, but I got a steal on it. It is a good computer. It's just not, like, all the components in it are about 5 years old.
That's newer than mine.
It's still, I looked at it like, look, I got a good deal and it's an upgrade. The little fellow was like, he kept messaging me going, okay, you realize this is like, it plays Fortnite, but it's not gonna run it at the highest settings or anything. I was like, dude, at this point in my life, you could try to tell me that a potato with a Windows sticker on it is a computer, and I'd say, look, it's a fucking upgrade. Give it to me. And that's just where I was at. So I'm thrilled with the thing, and I'm incredibly happy with it. But I'm not going to be running Battlefield 5 on it.
Yeah, you'll be doing that on your Xbox.
Yeah, maybe. They were giving that away if you watched the Game Awards on me last night. 500 people won Battlefield 5.
Did you?
I don't think I did. They said you would get a notification, and I currently do not have any notifications, and I checked because I knew you were going to ask.
So, well, that's some shit.
So, but maybe they haven't awarded them yet. Who knows? I don't have a notification about the Mixbot either, so maybe they're not out yet.
In due time, we'll find out.
Yeah. If you see me playing Battlefield 5, there you go.
Well, do you have EA access?
No.
I was going to say you could play the trial of it.
No, I do not.
Oh, well.
Because I bought a computer, I'm poor again. I was not poor for 2 days, now I'm poor again.
It's only $30 for a year. You could scrounge that up.
I really do need to, because I do miss having it. Especially, I know we were going to talk about the Game Awards, but...
Eventually.
Since we're talking about EA Access right now, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 is getting new content.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Do tell, because I didn't hear about this.
I don't even know if I wrote this part down. It's the sad part. But they tweeted about it, that they have a new game mode and some new characters coming. And it's pretty exciting, because it's been radio silence on Garden Warfare for quite a while.
That's a good game.
And a lot of people, yeah, they made a mobile version, but that's the last that we've heard anything out of PopCap. And a lot of people were hoping for a Peggle 3 or a Garden Warfare 3 at E3. So many threes in that sentence. But, I mean, we've just had radio silence. It seems a little conspicuous that they're like, oh by the way, Garden Warfare 2 is getting some new stuff. You still like that, right? So...
I have to play that more.
Maybe we will get a surprise. And maybe it's not too late to be like, surprise, Garden Warfare 3, bitches, available tomorrow.
I kind of doubt that.
I know, but I like the dream. That's because EA owns that shit now. They don't do any available today. Well, I lied, because Unravel 2 was like, surprise. So, I mean, it's not totally far-fetched. It could happen.
True.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, Game Awards.
Yeah, Game Awards. Those are a thing that happened.
Let's start with the pre-show. I came in a few minutes late and started watching when they announced Best Action Game, which went to Dead Cells.
That's a pretty impressive win.
I thought that was pretty cool.
It beat out Call of Duty Black Ops 4 and I believe Destiny. Destiny was in that too, right?
I don't remember. There were so many fucking awards.
There really were.
I wrote down the winners. I didn't write down the non-winners because they're obviously not as important. I'm an asshole.
I actually have some arguments about some of the non-winners here in a little bit, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. They showed a trailer for a brand new game called Journey to the Savage Planet. I thought that looked interesting.
It really did. I like those kind of survival chaos games, though. So I was like, the whole trailer, because I'm easily amused.
Yeah, I'm not huge into survival stuff, so I don't know if I'm going to play that one or not.
I will make you play it with me.
Sure
you will. I'll carry you.
I'll be trying to figure out how to eat something. You'll be like 40 levels ahead of me.
I'll already have a campfire and everything. Be like farming. And you'll just be like, the fuck is this?
I'll have died trying to craft a t-shirt or something to stay warm.
Is that what happened when you play Ark? Please tell me that. Did you play Ark?
Briefly.
Yeah, that's what Ark was like for you, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Same with
meanwhile,
Conan.
Meanwhile, I'm over there and I've got like, you know, big giant castles and T-Rexes and Giganotosaurs. I rode a wyvern around.
Yeah, I am terrible at survival stuff.
We're going to fix that, Joe.
We'll see. Best RPG went to Monster Hunter World, which I thought that was pretty cool for that game to get some recognition.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly surprised it won either. It's a sad thing. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Next.
I thought Dragon Quest was going to take it, but.
Really?
Yeah.
Nah. There was just so much hype, and everybody was so wound up over Monster Hunter World that I kind of figured it was a given.
Yeah.
That's how you feel about my opinion. Fuck off. What's next?
They had a bunch of esports awards that I didn't care about at all.
Nope.
Overwatch won best esports game. I figured that was an important one to jot down. And then they're like best esports player, best esports coach. Like, why? Why do these matter?
Rocket League not on, like, even nominated for that, though.
I don't know.
Rocket League is fucking huge. And yet, just completely snubbed for esports.
I guess because they don't have huge, massive world tournaments of it. I don't know.
I don't know if they're world tournaments. Man, they have like $1 million prize pools. Millions of dollars. It's an insane thing that I don't follow because I cannot, I don't do sports of any variety, not even esports. You put the word sports in there and I'm like, I'm done, bye.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but, I don't know. I was just genuinely surprised by the lineup, though, where I was like, where the fuck's Rocket League?
Yeah, it was kind of weird that wasn't included. But, you know, what are you going to do? There were only 5 nominees for everything, so maybe it was number 6.
Maybe.
Maybe. They had a video. The Stanley Parable is going to be coming to consoles with new endings and new content in 2019, so that's pretty exciting.
I've heard a lot about this game, and yet I still know jack shit about it.
Same.
Like, I've heard it mentioned a ton, but I'm just, I guess maybe because I'm not up to snuff on Steam games, that I'm just like, okay, I know that existed, but the trailer was funny, and it looks it was like hilarious. Something I'm going to end up playing anyway. I was like, yeah, this is one that's going to get put in my lap to review.
Yeah, if we get it, that's going to be yours. Not like, you know, 90% of the games aren't yours anyway anymore.
At this point, this is what I'm here for. It's just like, do you want this? Fuck it.
Fuck it, why not?
Yeah.
Best student game went to Combat 2018. It has a new name, but I forgot to write down what the new name was.
Did it have a new name? It needs a new name.
Yeah, the guy was wearing a shirt that had the name on it, and I forgot to write it down. So I'm a bad person.
I didn't even recognize that it had a new name. I was just like, oh, it's Combat 2018.
Yeah. And then they had a trailer for Among Trees, which is going to be hitting Steam Early Access in 2019.
That looked pretty.
Yeah, it did.
That's my jam.
They had a lot of really cool trailers on the show.
Yeah. And most of my responses to them were, oh my God, that's pretty.
There were a couple that was like, why is that on the one thing but not on other things?
Like this next thing we're going to talk about? Is this what we're up to?
Almost. We're almost
okay.
there.
Okay. All right.
We got to the show proper. The show kicked off with Reggie Fils-Aimé, Phil Spencer, and Sean Layden all on stage together. Nothing really massive happened. They were just kind of like talking about, oh, we have to, you know, it's a community, and when we play together, we all win together and stuff like that. I was hoping for some kind of cool announcement to happen, like crossplay is happening for real now.
I really was sitting there holding my breath, like, they're going to say crossplay. They're going to say, and it just didn't happen. I was like, the fuck?
Yeah. I was hoping for something.
Got all piped up for nothing, and, like, I don't know, maybe... maybe they bribed the Sony guy out there with a cookie or something. Cause
it seemed like Reggie and Phil Spencer were having fun out there, and Sean Layden felt like he was out of place.
He did not want to be. It was definitely a noticeable thing. So
it was still a cool moment, though.
It was. I think it was kind of indicative of gaming today, though. As much as everybody wants it to be all inclusive altogether, there's just that little holdout that's just not really going along with the fishes. And
maybe this is baby steps. Maybe something will come of this.
Maybe. I mean, fuck, they got them onto the stage together. They're in the same area. Maybe Phil Spencer's just going to go over and be like tapping on his head going, yo, it's really, you really want to do this, you know?
You're the only holdout. Come on, stop being a dick.
Stop being a dick. I would love the hot mic moment for Phil Spencer to just be standing there talking to the Sony CEO dude and be like, just stop being a dick. That will never happen. Phil Spencer is far too composed, but yeah. I can dream.
Yeah, Awesome Prime in chat is saying, hopefully it's a start of crossplay. I mean, we have the start with Fortnite. But
yeah.
I think that was more pressure from Epic than anything else.
And realistically, Epic making $300 million a month, are you going to tell them no? I mean,
when it happened, everyone was like, oh, Sony's the best. They're really getting behind crossplay now. It's like, dude, it's one fucking game.
One game. It's still not available in Rocket League, and Rocket League's had the capability for it since the beginning. They accidentally turned it on once.
Yep.
So, I mean,
they said that it is ready to go. All they're waiting for is the okay from Sony.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it was even a case of having to push updates or anything. It's just literally just a button.
Flip a switch.
Yeah.
And it's done. And it's ready.
I mean, we've got crossplay with Nintendo and PC and
Xbox.
Yeah. Somebody's got the ball and went home.
Anyway, next award was for Best Narrative, which went to Red Dead Redemption 2, which we're going to hear that name a lot.
Do you remember when I said I had some complaints?
Let's hear it.
This is one of them. I just think that the others in the category had far better narratives than Red Dead. Don't get me wrong. From what I've seen of Red Dead, it's a fantastic game. But I don't consider it a narrative. Does that make sense? Like, kind because of its open world nature. And I mean, you're not, it's not, if you look at Red Dead Redemption compared to God of War or Spider-Man and the way that their stories are told, like, it doesn't even feel like Red Dead should have been in the category, let alone won it. And I'm not just trying to throw shade at a game I don't really enjoy or whatever, but it just didn't fit. Like, I think of narrative, I think of, like, Life is Strange, or, you know, even God of War, for what it is more of a narrative. I can't remember what the other one was. There was another one that I was like, oh, that could have been the winner, and I forgot already.
Because there were 400 awards given out and we can't remember all of them.
And even in my notes, I wrote down best narrative, Red Dead Redemption 2. And then I put like 5 question marks because I was like, the fuck, but it just didn't feel like a good fit for me that it should have won. And this is one of those cases, like you said, we're going to hear Red Dead a lot. And I think it was so heavily anticipated and it's got such a fan base that it might have won in a bunch of situations where maybe it wasn't the best suited.
Yeah, it's the hype won it for a lot, I think. Anyway, next they showed a trailer, a bunch of Marvel characters. I got really, really excited. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, developed by Team Ninja of Koei Tecmo Games. Here's the catch. Mm-hmm. Switch exclusive.
When I saw this, I was like, oh, there are a lot of people that are going to be very happy. And then it popped up and said Switch exclusive. And I said, now 97% of those people are really fucking pissed.
I don't know about that many because there's a lot of Switch owners. But this exclusive shit needs to stop.
I don't think there's enough Switch owners to justify Marvel going exclusive. That is quite a thing. I'm not even sure I have the words to like express how I feel about that game. I've said it a million times on the show. I'm sure people are rolling their eyes at me. You're probably going to roll your eyes at me. Exclusivity is bad for gamers.
Hey, I say it all the time. Third-party exclusives need to stop.
It just shouldn't even be a thing. And I typically don't think of Nintendo as being the group that goes for those. Usually you think of third party exclusives and it's Sony gobbling up everything, mm-hmm. Microsoft going, we don't really think it's a good idea. We do it sometimes just because everybody expects you to.
Yeah.
But we don't, I mean, when Call of Duty went to PlayStation as for like all their marketing and stuff, you kind of just saw Xbox go, wasn't really a good idea anyway, guys. You know? And they're not wrong. It wasn't. And it's been something that you've heard Phil Spencer and Larry are both really kind of attached to in the last few years. Is just like, we shouldn't have been doing it to start with.
Yeah.
And it's true. But you don't really think of Nintendo going, you can't play this, you can't play that, unless it's something first party, which is understandable.
Well, that and Bayonetta. They have Bayonetta exclusive.
They did snatch up Bayonetta, and I remember being like, the fuck are you doing? When that happened, too. Because it's not what you expect for them.
Well, that said, I'm probably still going to buy it because I am thrilled that there's a new Ultimate Alliance game. I just wish it were on everything instead of just one thing.
It's an interesting game to make Switch exclusive, too, because it's not... I mean, you don't think of Switch as, like, excellent graphics and hardcore fighting games. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. But now it makes you wonder, Sony got Spider-Man, Nintendo got Marvel Ultimate Alliance. When is Xbox getting an exclusive Punisher game? That's what I want to see.
Not because it was exclusive, but just because it's Punisher. I'd play it. There's like 3 Marvel characters I give a fuck about. And the Punisher would probably come close to being one of them. Maybe. Didn't they make a Punisher show for Netflix? I didn't ever watch it.
Yeah. I never watched it either.
You know, I'm not a Marvel person. I like Deadpool. Deadpool's great. Deadpool's Ryan Reynolds. That's why I like Deadpool.
Oh, let's see what happened next. They had the Industry Icon Award for Greg Thomas from Visual Concepts, just going over the history of Visual Concepts, all the sports games that they put out. That was a cool moment.
It really was. I like the Industry Icon Awards. I like that last year it was a female, though, and this year we've gone back to just being a dude that did a thing. It's not to downplay his achievements or anything, which sounds like I'm doing, and I don't mean to, but he did a lot of great work, and he is by all intents and purposes an industry icon, and so he deserved his award. But when you routinely see industry icons as a homogenous group, you look for those moments where there's a standout, and we had that last year and we didn't this year. And so I was like, well, so close.
Oh boy.
You know, but that's just one of those things, like, that doesn't matter to people that aren't like me. Yeah. You know, most of the gaming community is male, and that's a thing, and it's fine. But, you know,
well, maybe next year will be another woman.
Maybe next year. I just like to see more representation. And I know there's people who are going to roll their eyes at that shit too. But it's true, as a female player, and having daughters who want to go into the game industry, just like to see that their work is going to be appreciated and recognized too. And that's what, you know, we had last year when we saw a female be recognized as an industry icon. So, yeah, maybe next year.
Maybe they'll take turns. Every other year I'll be a female.
I'd be okay with that. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to force it or anything. It's just that there are a lot of
girls. Oh, no, you're trying to force it.
Yeah. You can only have a female girl power. If it makes sense to the story. I hate that argument. Go ahead, next. Sorry, get me off of this topic.
After that, they had a video on Steven Spahn of Able Gamers. They had a couple of profiles through the show.
This was fantastic. It really was. And it was heartbreaking when he was talking about the guidance counselor.
Yeah.
Telling him to just go home and enjoy his years. And he's Steven Spahn. We did the interview with him, and I still follow him on Twitter and everything. He's an incredible, incredible force in the gaming community, and he deserves every bit of recognition that he gets.
And he's funny too.
He is hilarious.
He's a funny dude. He was great on the show.
I just really enjoy, you know, and when he tweets, even his tweets and stuff are just ridiculously humorous. But he's a great guy, and he definitely deserved the recognition. He could have been an industry icon, and I would not have been mad about it.
I don't know if he would be considered an industry icon, because he's not a developer.
But he had a role in the development of the adaptive controller, and Able Gamers was doing a lot for the industry for disabled players long before the Xbox inclusive team become a thing. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the industry icon is more geared for people who actually develop the games, though. I'm glad he got a feature spotlight on the show. I just don't know if he would be, you know, the right target for an industry icon award.
I don't know. I guess I just don't feel like, because it's not developer icon, it's industry.
Yeah, true.
Industry is, like, you sit there, you fussed about the esports awards, but I guarantee you, we're going to have an esports person as an industry icon long before we have somebody like Steven Spahn.
Yeah. Hey, Awesome Prime just dropped 4 biddies in the chat, so yay, thank you for that, Awesome. You are awesome.
Indeed. Oh, that's so bad. How do I end this chat?
After that, they had a Rocket League trailer for new McLaren DLC that launched tonight.
That car is sexy.
I'm guessing you're buying it.
I have not, but I would like to. And I don't typically buy the DLC cars. I only have one DLC pack that I've bought, because I'm pretty adamant I like my Takumi. And there's not a lot of cars in Rocket League that kind of just suit the aesthetic that I like the Takumi. It's got a small profile. It's kind of sleek looking. But the McLaren, it's a little larger than I like. But, I would probably buy the McLaren.
That's a yes, you're buying it.
You don't just get the cars when you buy the DLC pack. There's a couple of player banners. I'm a little bummed out that they didn't make some kind of really cool goal explosion to go with it. But Lord knows I love my goal explosions. I bought the Jurassic Park one just so I could have the T-Rex.
Yeah.
And I still use it, Christmas be damned. but I was really tempted. I'm really tempted to pick up the McLaren because it looks so good.
Yeah. After that was the award for best performance, which went to Roger Clark from Red Dead Redemption 2, which I think that one was well deserved. That was a really good performance in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I can concede to that one. Again, I still think that hype played a big role in it, but...
Oh, it very clearly did.
But they were all strong contenders.
Yeah.
They really were.
And I'm glad they went to a bunch of, you know, big voice actors and not just necessarily celebrities who did voice roles.
Yeah, that I was a lot happier about. I really was. Because there's the potential to be like, oh, this higher named celebrity did it, so just immediately give it to them.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And it was like, these are legitimate voice actors who, you know, you wouldn't know other than their role in the game. So they deserve it.
I just realized we're a half hour in and we barely scratched the surface. We're doing too much talking.
I'm sorry. I have opinions. I can't help it.
I know. So do I. But there's just so much. They had a trailer for Far Cry New Dawn, which is a post-apocalyptic after the bombs dropped at the end of Far Cry 5, which, spoilers, the bombs dropped at the end of Far Cry 5.
Yeah, I was like, he said that, and I was like, well.
Yeah, they kind of spoiled the end of the game, but I guess if you haven't played it yet, you're probably not going to.
I mean, I probably wasn't going to. I wanted to. It looked cool as shit, but I just hadn't caught it on sale to a point where I was like, oh, yeah, I should probably grab that. I haven't played any of the other Far Cry games. We have Far Cry Primal, and that is the only one I'm familiar with.
I loved Far Cry 3.
David played the shit out of Primal, and so that's basically my experience with Far Cry. I don't understand any of the story or anything as far as that goes, but I want to get my hands on New Dawn.
Yeah, well, it's coming out February 15th. I couldn't tell if this was DLC for Far Cry 5 or if it's a standalone game. They weren't very clear on that.
They weren't. I am fairly certain it is a standalone. But I definitely want to get my hands on it because, yeah, I'm going to go there. Women of color are the main characters, and that's not something you see very often, and I always want to support that. So I'm in there. I would very have, plus it just looks fucking good.
It does. It looked awesome.
I kept watching it and I was just like, why haven't I played other Far Cry games?
Well, maybe this will be the one to get you started on the series.
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm playing all these indies and I don't have time to play Far Cry, but I really want to play this one. So I'll cross my fingers for it. Although February, man, why did they have to pick February?
Seriously, fucking February, the 15th too.
Just for the
right
love
in the middle
of
everything.
I don't even have time in February for normal hijinks because February is my birthday and then there's Valentine's Day and then my wedding anniversary. They're all back to back. I don't have time in February for this shit. And then now they're just like, every AAA title ever is February. Ta-da, here you go. And I'm sitting here going, February only has 28 days, guys. Calm the fuck down. We have more games dropping in February than we have days in the month.
That might be true.
Calm down.
That really might be true.
Okay. I'm calm now. I'm good. Next
was a trailer for the game Hades from Supergiant Games. They're the makers of Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre. It is available now in... God, what is with my throat today?
Good job. It's
available now in early access on the Epic Games Store.
I have thoughts and opinions, but those are on my other not Game Awards related pages as far as the Epic Games Store goes.
We'll get to that later, then.
We'll get to that.
Maybe. They had gameplay footage for Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey, which is coming in 2019 from the creator of Assassin's Creed.
That looks incredible.
I want to see more on it because I couldn't really tell what the fuck it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell what the point of it is and as how the gameplay is actually going to work out. But at least as far as the cinematic trailer goes, I was like, you have my attention. Mm-hmm. Here I am.
Well, there's apparently a 20-minute video on GameSpot of gameplay footage, which I did not watch because I had other stuff to do.
Yeah, yeah, just there's not time.
Yeah.
We have to sleep sometimes.
Allegedly. Allegedly. They had a video for Forza Horizon 4's Fortune Island, which is coming out December 13th. So that is right around the corner.
So can't wait for that. Fucking good.
It looks gorgeous.
That lightning strike in the cinematic was just like, that was so good.
Yeah. It looks really, really good. They had a trailer for Scavengers, which I don't remember this one.
Did there I was not write so this much. There's so much shit on my notes that I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah, there was just so much going on with the awards. We're not even like a quarter of the way through all the shit that happened.
Nope. Somehow I missed writing down Scavengers because I went from, yeah, I fucked up. Okay, keep going.
Best score in music went to Red Dead Redemption 2.
Imagine that.
Best audio design went to Red Dead Redemption 2.
Imagine that.
Best art direction went to Return of the Obra Dinn, which Red Dead lost. Wow.
Fucking good. You know what? I've never even heard of this game until tonight. Me neither. Or last night. And I am totally okay with that. But wow. It deserved this award because it was the only one that was in any way kind of innovative.
It looked stunning.
Like the other ones were pretty, don't get me wrong. But as a surreal artist myself, I can totally appreciate that they went out of the way to not be a hyper-realistic looking game.
Mm-hmm.
And to go up against all the hyper-realistic games. And they're like, no, look at, fuck, we're line art. And I'm like, yes. Give me more of that. Because we holler, we want games to be seen as an art style. As art, and they are, but we need to simultaneously give more credit to the games that break the rules and don't just go for being that aren't trying to be a CGI movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad this happened. We needed more of this.
We do.
Sorry, anyway, Red
Dead. Best mobile game went to Red Dead. No. Best mobile game went to Florence, which I'm not familiar with that game, but I might have to check it out.
I am not. I was a little sad because I was hoping for Donut County. Only because I'm not familiar with Florence. I could very well have loved it, but I'm just more familiar with Donut County, and I was just like, aw.
Yeah. Best VR game went to Astrobot Rescue Mission, which I have heard so much good about this game. And I really need to pick it up and play it, given, you know, now it is best VR game of the year.
I was rooting for Moss.
Oh, me too.
I was just rooting for Moss. I love what we got to see of Moss, and I was really bummed out. But at least they were nominated.
Yeah.
But they deserved the win. I'm not even familiar with the game that won, and I just feel like Moss should have won.
from everything I'm hearing, people are saying Astrobot is like the killer app for PlayStation VR. Mm-hmm. So apparently this one absolutely deserved it, and I really need to get off my ass and play it.
You'll have to let us know if it absolutely deserved it, because beating Moss is pretty hard for me.
The biggest problem is it's $40, and I just don't have $40 to drop on a VR game. And if I have $40 to drop on a VR game, it's going to be Tetris Effect. And then if I have another $40 to drop on a VR game, it'll probably be Astrobot.
But it won Game of the Year. Maybe it'll get a Game of the Year edition sale.
Maybe. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I should check. It might be on sale for the Game Awards.
Could be.
Maybe. They had a trailer for Warframe on the Switch. And then they had a trailer for Dead by Daylight. They announced that dedicated servers are going to be coming in the summer.
That DLC character looked cool as shit.
New trailer for the Darkness Among Us expansion for Dead by Daylight. They had a video for Anthem showing some of the story.
That was nice. Although it was kind of expected. It feels like it's your typical sci-fi dystopia kind of story. which you pretty much just expect from what we knew about it anyway. But it did look good.
Yeah. After that, a big surprise, they announced Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled, a remake of the original game with online play, coming June 21st on PS4, which was announced at the Game Awards. That is what they announced at the Game Awards. Press release after the fact, it is hitting all platforms. It is hitting PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. I wish they would have clarified that during the Game Awards.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sony probably paid for that.
Probably.
A lot.
But the game looks awesome, and I'm glad it's hitting everything.
Yeah, I was glad to hear it's hitting everything, because it did look good. I'm not usually even into those kind of kart racers, per se, and I was just like, oh, that looks like fun. And then I saw PS4, and I went, well.
Well, good news. It's hitting everything.
Yeah.
Content creator of the year, because apparently that matters, went to whoever Ninja is. I don't follow stuff like that, so.
I don't like Ninja.
I would have given it to the SML podcast, because we are the content creators of the year.
I mean, we probably create more content.
I doubt it. I'm sure he streams daily.
I'm sure he does as well. And
we have like 4 hours a week.
No, we have like 4 hours in one show, and we do two.
This one might be 4 hours if this keeps up.
I'm sorry, but I fully expected Ninja to win too. Like, it was one of those, it was like, well, no shit.
Yeah.
But I'm still mad about it.
Oh, No Time said he would have voted for us.
No Time.
Thanks, No Time.
It's good people. Thank you for being good people, No Time.
We appreciate you.
We do. We really do. Like, it seems like we say that sarcastically, but no, like, we appreciate you.
I appreciate everybody who's in chat right now.
I can't speak for Joe because Joe's a jerk. But
I appreciate everybody in chat right now hanging out and listening to us. Awesome Prime, Rainbow Rockstar, Avenged Immortal, No Time for Games. I appreciate all of you because you're hanging out listening to us just bullshit.
Yeah, it's true. Like, we do this shit because you guys show up.
Yes.
Pretty much.
And because we have to.
Also true.
After that was a video for The Outer Worlds from Obsidian Games. This one is slated for 2019. This looked really good. It's like space Fallout.
Yeah. It was like Fallout 76 should have been in space, and just better. Don't let us down, Obsidian, is what I'm trying to warn you.
The big surprise here is, despite Obsidian now being an Xbox studio, the game is coming out for Xbox, Steam, and PS4.
Because exclusivity is bad, guys. I just dropped my pen. That's how angry I am about exclusivity.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure it's because this one was signed before the purchase.
Yeah. It was already in development, clearly. But still, kudos.
It's good to see it hitting everything.
Yeah. Because the next one from Obsidian will not be.
Yeah, sure. Probably not.
But we will have it in Game Pass, so.
Yeah. They had a video for Dauntless, which I've seen our friend Ian playing that quite a bit on Steam. That looked really cool. Going to be coming to Xbox and PlayStation in April.
When that trailer played and people were like, oh, Dauntless, and I'm sitting there going, how have I not heard of this?
Because it's on this? Steam.
Yeah. That's what I figured out. So I clearly need to do some research, because it does look like something I would be playing.
It's like a four-person online Monster Hunter kind of thing.
Yeah, I would play the shit out of it.
After that was another person profile. I missed this because Ashley overslept and I had to go wake her.
No. Yeah. I don't remember who it was.
I don't remember either. So after that was The Last Campfire from Hello Games. That looked really cute.
That did look adorable. It also looked like it was one of those that's deceptively adorable. Like, it looks adorable, but it's going to be savage and difficult.
Yeah. It's going to kick your ass.
Yeah, it's deceptive, but it's adorable.
Best esports player, because again, why not, went to someone called Sonic Fox, who was hilarious accepting the award.
I love this little guy.
Quote of the show is him saying, I really won this shit.
Yeah. And he just gets up there and he goes, I'm gay, I'm a furry, I'm everything Republicans hate, but I'm the best esports player.
Yes, a black gay furry won the award.
Oh my God,
and I couldn't be happier.
And he was so nervous and humble, and he was just giggling, and that's the kind of people who need to win awards.
Yes, the people who legitimately appreciate that they just won an award.
He literally couldn't believe he was there, even with everything he's done to get there. That's the kind of people that deserve to win. And I just he had the giggles, and I just grinned the whole time. I was like, I even remember I took my headphones off and looked at David, and I told him what the little guy said, and I was like, he's just fucking adorable. I don't know who he is, but I'm going to go follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because I don't do esports, but whatever. He's adorable. Let's go.
After that, I have this written down exactly. PUBG video for Winter Map, PS4 and Xbox in January, on PC test servers tonight. Defer to Eternal.
Yeah, this is so cool. Also, first, let's talk about that trailer, because that trailer was hilarious.
That was a good trailer.
There was the dead PUBG dude laying there in the snow, and the pretty little bird just pecking at his hand, and then the bird grabs, and I was like, no, don't blow up the bird, because I'm a bird person. And I was like, don't blow up the bird, and then it's boom. And then here comes the little bird to the nest, and it puts the little grenade pin in its nest. And I was like, that's just fucking amazing. I was so, my little artsy fartsy side was just all over that trailer. Like, now I want to, that might be what I paint tonight. I just want to paint that little bird with the grenade pin. I was so tickled by it.
I just like how he pulled the pin and then it zoomed all the way out and had a far away view of just poof.
I was just like, the bird's toast. But no, the bird wasn't toast. Spoiler alert. It was so good. If you have not watched this trailer, even after I've just spoiled it for you, just go. I don't care if you like PUBG or not. It was just so good. That aside, now that I've got that off my chest, because I've been waiting for a while to talk about that, the map itself is 6x6. This is kind of what we consider the sweet spot in Battle Royale. So Erangel is 8x8, and that's how many squares are in the grid for the map. And this leads to like long drawn out playtime. Like, we won't start a match on Erangel unless we've got like an hour and a half to kill, because it will take you a long time to get to that final circle. Whereas Sandhawk is 4x4, and it's super fast. Everything is rapid fire. As soon as you drop, you're in somebody's sights, and you just got to move. So the winter map is, I forget what they said the name of it was. Miramar is also fucking big, and it's just slow and horrible. But one of the things that they said about the winter map that caught my attention is that because there's snow, you leave footprints and people can track you by your footprints. And that just changes the way that you play PUBG. Like, at this point, yeah, you listen for the footprints and you can hear people walking around you, but there's a whole new element to an actual trace of you being left behind.
Okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I just...
You went super quiet.
I don't play PUBG, so none of this makes sense to me. Except leaving footprints in the snow.
Did you play the Darwin Project at all?
No.
Darwin Project had a similar effect where you left evidence of where you were behind. As far as PUBG goes now, like, basically the only way to know if somebody was where you were is like, oh, they left doors open. Or you go into a building and it's wiped clean, then you can be like, yeah, that's pretty good evidence that that somebody was here. But otherwise, you don't really have any kind of way to know unless you hear them. But this changes that, because you can just see, yes, the people walked through here, and you can continue on that trail, or you can decide, I'm going to veer off. But then you have to worry, you're leaving evidence of where you were behind as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a choice. You have to move. So it changes the way that you approach your movement in the game. And I think it's going to shake things up.
Matt in chat agrees with you, saying in a first-person shooter perspective, you're right. We normally depend on sound in shooters.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Like, that's how gaming headphones came to be, is because the audio quality and being able to hear directional sound is so important. Not even just footsteps, but even with playing PUBG and Blackout and just Call of Duty multiplayer in general, people that are above average players will tell you they've learned to pick up on that directional input of, you know, I can hear a gunshot, it's close away. I think I tried to explain that to you when we played Blackout.
It's close times. Away.
It's close or further away. Look, Joe, steroids. I'm buzzing. but it affects how you approach your position in a game, how you move in on an area, or whether or not you avoid it. And so it just having that visual input over just the audio is really going to change things. Cool. And people are just going to run in and get fucked anyway, because that's what people do.
Oh, man. After that, they had a musical performance for Devil May Cry, which was pretty cool.
So good. I love that song. And I'm so excited for Devil May Cry.
Well, we'll mention Devil May Cry again in a little bit. Yep. After that was a trailer for Atlas, which is a new open world survival MMO for 40,000 players from Team Wildcard. How has
Studio Wildcard kept their mouth shut about this?
I don't know, but it launches on Steam on the 13th.
That's incredible.
On Steam Early Access. It will hit Xbox Game Preview early next year as well.
I will say some of the imagery that they showed in the game looked a little rough around the edges. But it is early access, and it does need some patching, and I suspect it will be smoothed out long before we get to a full release status. I can't remember how long Ark was in early access. I want to say it was like a year and a half, 2 years.
Some like people might say it is still in early access.
The once it come out and some of the final patches, it's smooth as shit though now. Like, it's incredible. But I mean, there were a few moments where I was like super psyched up, and I was like, oh my god, this is going to be incredible. And then there were a couple scenes where I was like, yeah, that's early. But I am really excited for it. And I remember I even straight up like grabbed my phone and texted Stuart, and I was like, we are playing this a lot.
40,000 players is crazy.
That's insanity. And that's just... Oh, I cannot wait to experience that. You know that there's going to be griefers, so I hope that they do like they did with Ark, and they have the option to do PvE or PvP. Yeah. And I also hope they make it to where you can just have a private, explore the world on your own without having to deal with people fucking your life.
I don't know if they'll have private, because the whole point of an MMO is to have, you know, massively multiplayer.
That's the way that Ark was built too, though. And they had the option to where you could just, I mean, you were stuck with tethering, but you could host a private save file.
No.
And didn't need to deal with servers and everything like that. So I hope that they go that same route. That way, if I find myself getting fucked too hard, I could just be like, never mind. I got my own little island, and I'll fly around on dragons, and I'll deal with this shit my damn self.
After that was a cool sizzle reel for a bunch of indies on the Epic Games Store. I didn't take notes on this because I thought it was just a commercial.
Yeah.
And it was way too late in the trailer before I realized, oh, there's a bunch of indies that they're showing off in this. The big reveal was that Ashen was out right now.
Yes.
Ashen. And funny enough, Ashen was launched on the Xbox store like 2 hours before the Game Awards. So I was playing it before the Game Awards started.
Yeah, a lot of people were. And there's some drama there.
With what?
With Ashen. Because it was supposed to be Xbox Play Anywhere. And Epic Games swooped in. Laundered them with money, as they are wont to do, and it is no longer Xbox Play Anywhere. There is no cross play, and it is on the Epic Games Store.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty.
That is very shitty.
On the bright side, it is still on Game Pass.
It is still on Game Pass, but they Ashton has rode Microsoft marketing pretty hard the last year at least. So for them to just kind of, and Microsoft's store, like, I don't think they even had enough notice that it was going to be on Epic Games to pull the crossplay and stuff to, like, to update the Microsoft store, because it still said Play Anywhere, but it was not. Yeah. You couldn't install it. So, I mean, that was not a good look. Not a good look at all.
Yeah.
A lot of people are still having fun with it, and that's great.
It's getting good reviews.
They did a shitty, shitty thing. So
anyway, after that was a video for Crackdown 3, which was funny, coming out February 15th. We know about that. After that was a video for Elder Scrolls Online. And then a bunch more awards. Best debut indie went to The Messenger on the Switch, which well-deserved.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that, but yeah.
Best fighting game went to Dragon Ball FighterZ, which another well-deserved win.
Was surprised. There was something else I was expecting to win, and I don't even remember what it was now. But I was surprised by that one as well.
Best family game went to Red Dead Redemption 2. Oh, wait, wrong 2. Best family game went to Overcooked 2.
It was so exciting because I fully expected Mario Party to win that. And I was just like, I sat here and I told David, I said, Overcooked deserved it, but Mario Party's going to nab it. And then they said, Overcooked 2. And I went, I threw my hands up in the air. I was like, fuck yeah!
Best strategy game went to Into the Breach.
I haven't played that.
Me neither.
There was something else that I was rooting for. And again, I don't remember now.
I don't know. After that was a teaser video, new Dragon Age coming from BioWare. I'm excited about that.
Much excitement. I haven't played any of the Dragon Age games, but Dee's into them. And I remember saying, oh, look, Dragon Age. And he was busy playing Construction Simulator. And he went, uh-huh. And then went back. And I was like, well, okay.
Construction Simulator.
Construction Simulator 2, motherfucker. 2.
Nice.
I don't know. Me and him have been fighting. We have 2 Xboxes, and yet somehow I'm still fighting him for control of my Xbox because he's playing Construction Simulator all week.
Matt's excited that, fuck yeah, Dragon Age. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited for a new Dragon Age. I love the series.
I know it is very popular, and this was highly anticipated. So I'm glad for everybody that's a fan.
Yeah. Best indie game went to Celeste, which another well-deserved win.
Yeah.
And it also won the Game for Impact Award.
Did it?
Yep.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think I wrote that down and then just forgot it.
Proud of you.
There's so many notes.
There are. We're getting close, though. We're getting close. It's only been an hour.
Mm-hmm.
They had a trailer for The Pathless from the makers of Abzu coming out 2019. listed only for PS4, which, boo, but, you know, we saw Abzu hit Xbox afterwards, so hopefully this will hit other platforms as well.
Yeah, in about a year, I would expect it. I was excited. I was watching the whole thing. I was just like, you're so pretty, and I want to touch you. And then it goes PS4, and I was like, fuck off.
You son of a bitch.
You traitors, you horrible people, and I just can't.
Well, hopefully, can't even anymore. Hopefully a couple months afterwards, it'll hit other platforms as well.
I hope so, because it does break my heart when I see a game, and I'm just like, you're so pretty, and I can't have you. Although, I guess, I don't know, maybe I could check it. I might be able to play it on Steam. Maybe. Or Epic Games!
Yeah. they had a trailer for Survived By, which is out tonight on Steam Early Access. That looked pretty cool.
It did.
After that was a Magic the Gathering esports segment. I watched football.
I think that was the point where I got up and like got me a bowl of soup or something.
they had a Red Dead music performance after that. That was really good.
It was an incredible performance. Went on a little long, but it was an incredible performance.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to that chick for singing in a corset too, because holy fuck.
after that, Stranger Things video game is being developed by Bonus XP.
We knew that there was supposed to be a Stranger Things Telltale game, and so I didn't think they were going to let that fall, but I wasn't expecting this. It's co-op.
Cool.
It's co-op, and I like how they were like, we upgraded to 16-bit. It looked cool. It looked like a lot of fun. I definitely want to play it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. After that, Ed Boon came out for the best sports and racing game, which went to, oh, wait, fuck you. It's Mortal Kombat, motherfuckers.
That was so cool.
Trailer for Mortal Kombat 11 launching April 23rd.
Oh, I literally just, that was one of those jaw drop moments, and I'm just screaming that I
love how they did it.
So thrilled.
I love how they did it. And afterwards, he's like, I think they played the wrong video.
Oh my gosh. It was so amazing. Like, it didn't even dawn on me what was happening. And then just you saw Raiden and Scorpion going at it and just.
Oh, it looked brutal.
Blood. And this is what Mortal Kombat should be. This was what, when you played Mortal Kombat as a kid and you saw all that pixel blood, this is what you were imagining it was. And now it finally is. And I was so excited. And then I just kind of stopped and I was like, nobody plays Mortal Kombat with me though, because I kicked their asses.
Yeah, you'd probably kick my ass.
And I'm sad because this is the Mortal Kombat of my childhood dreams. Fucking nobody's gonna play it with me.
You'll find people online.
Maybe. The last Mortal Kombat I played, I got accused of hacking a lot.
Oh, Jesus.
Have I mentioned that I'm ungodly good at Mortal Kombat for some reason? Yeah.
Anyway, after the video, they actually did announce the best sports and racing game, and it went to Forza Horizon 4.
It did, which was the only racing game in the category.
Yeah.
With four sports games. What an odd combination for the category. Like,
it makes sense to me. Sports and racing go together.
I don't know, maybe because I don't like sports and I do like racing, that I'm just like, what? Like, as soon as they said it, and I'm sitting there going, were there not enough other racing games? What other racing games came out this year? And then I thought, well, they could have at least filled it with other indies if they just did racing.
Yeah.
Like, the Grip. And so, I mean, obviously at that point, Forza's still going to win it, but even still, against PES 19 and FIFA 19, Forza's going to win it. So, and they did. They deserved it. It's an incredible game. But it just seems like such an odd combo category to me that I'm just like, I don't know what. You could have just said this is the Forza category. Forza wins.
Hey, it won, so.
It won.
Well deserved.
Yes, indeed.
After that, they showed a trailer for Psychonauts 2 coming from Starbreeze and Double Fine in 2019. We're going to talk about Starbreeze in a little bit as well, so I wonder if that Starbreeze news is going to affect this at all.
I don't know. We'll get there.
Yeah. Phil Spencer announced that a Devil May Cry 5 demo is hitting Xbox today, and then they showed a new trailer.
I installed it.
I didn't install it yet. I have to.
I installed it, but I haven't got to play it yet because I still have review shit I had to finish up on. But, ah. I'm so excited. That's my whole weekend. Just Devil May Cry.
After that was another profile video. I was talking to someone about a ride to MAGFest, so I missed this as well. I'm such an asshole. I missed all the profile videos.
Was there another? Did I finally go? There was one point where I was like, look, I need to pee and I need to sneeze. And I'm living life on the edge at the moment. And then I finally broke down after the Devil May Cry video and I went to pee. Nice. And I was like, I was so afraid I was going to miss something.
No, after that was Best Game Direction, which went to God of War, which also won Best Action Adventure Game.
I can see the direction going to God of War. I don't remember what I'm sure Spider-Man was another one of the entries. Probably Red Dead. And I think Detroit Become Human was the other one.
I don't know. David Cage games, they immediately turn me off just because he's a pretentious dick.
He is a dick. The story for Become Human was good, and I could have seen it winning, best direction. But God of War did deserve it too. It was incredibly well directed. If I'm not mistaken, it was like a one camera pan the whole time, and like it didn't have a ton of cutaways and stuff like that. So
I really have to play God of War. Like, I really, really need to play God of War.
I watched one person stream it, and that's my extent of it. So if it's like any different beyond what I saw that person play, then yeah. I'm not familiar with it. But as far as what I saw there, I could see the justification for winning.
Yeah. They had a video for Fortnite Season 7, which is Christmas themed, and then they talked about Fortnite Creative launching December 13th. That looks pretty cool. The Fortnites.
Well, with Fortnite Creative, if you bought Season 7 Battle Pass, you already have Fortnite Creative. You got it a week early. So go tear shit up on your own little island. What I thought was interesting is that goodbye Risky Rails. They got rid of that whole segment of the map, and now we have the block. And this is a showcase of community voted for, community created content right there in the middle of the island. It'll be interesting to see how that changes gameplay in Fortnite. Not that I play it, not that I care, but I'm sure plenty of people will have hot takes on it that I can draw from.
Alton Prime is saying that Creative Fortnite is a bit hard at first, so it must be weird to get used to.
You know, if you played Fortnite Save the World, I didn't, but I remember when it came out, and I remember everybody dragging it because it had such a high learning curve for the building, and that's why I laughed. I never imagined Fortnite Battle Royale becoming what it has, because my entire experience with Fortnite prior to that was the Surviving the World, which was the game initially. That's all it was. But I remember the pages on top of pages when Shiz streamed it, the tutorials, and him and Carnage just sitting there like trying to figure out how to do literally anything because it was so complicated. So my first thought with Creative, which I've heard people jokingly refer to as Fortcraft. it's a natural evolution to this kind of game, I guess, at the point that it's at. But I imagine that it does have quite a see, 4x4. It's Sandhawk size for PUBG players. But it has quite a learning curve if it's anything like the tons of tutorial pages from Surviving the World.
Well, after that was a new video for Rage 2, which is now coming out May 14th. That looks insane.
They got smart.
Yes.
It is neither February nor March, because March has a ton of shit coming too. So I saw May and I was like, I might actually get to play that.
After that, the award for Best Ongoing Game went to Fortnite, which also won Best Multiplayer Game.
Look, I have parentheses, and I put Siege was robbed. I really did. Siege was robbed, because if you consider, Siege was so small to start with, and even though they haven't changed the core of the game, the addition of all of the new operators has just really shook things up, and yet somehow it still stays balanced. Like, they add these operators with just insane abilities, and yet nobody feels overpowered, nobody feels out of whack. They all just feel natural and like they belong there, and like they've been there from the start. And I think that is a serious testament to an ongoing game, to just be able to throw in, like, you hear Overwatch and like, we got a new character, and everybody goes, yeah, but they're overpowered and you're gonna have to nerf them in 3 days. But you don't hear that shit with Siege. Like, they go, all right, it's a new season, we've got new operators, here you go. And bonus points to them that you can buy the operators, but for longtime players who put their time into this, they don't have to. You can earn the renown and have the characters without paying extra. And that's a huge thing for a game that depends on the revenue from these characters to still go, look, you've put your time in, here you go.
Yeah.
That's something to respect. Whereas Fortnite's like, look, $40. We got a new skin. It's a chicken. It was designed by an 8-year-old.
Oh, well.
You know, carry on.
After that was a Persona video, which this was the shocker of the night. Joker from Persona 5 is coming to Smash Brothers as part of Challenger Pack 1.
I wrote this down even though I don't understand what any of it is. Because I haven't played Smash and I haven't played Persona and I don't know why this is a big deal. Although it did look cool. It was an interesting video. And I was like, well, you have my attention even though I have no fucking idea what's going on.
Well, Persona 5 was one of the biggest RPGs of the year on PlayStation 4. And now the lead character from the game is going to be in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
So it's a PlayStation 4 game.
Yes.
That's interesting.
It's not made by Sony. It's from Atlas. So it's third-party exclusive. But who knows? Maybe this will lead to Persona 5 hitting the Switch.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who would lose their shit at that. Because probably. I have heard a lot about Persona 5, even though I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah. Just know that it's big news.
One of the interesting things, though, that I did write down is that the Challenger packs, they don't just come with the character.
No, they come with the character, they come with the stage, and they come with a bunch of music as well.
Yeah, so there is more involved, too. It's very similar to the DLC lineup that you get with Rivals of Aether.
Yeah.
So
each character pack will be $5.99, or you could get the pack of five of them for $25.
Right, but there's only one character per pack.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where I...
Or one character... Challenge Pack 1 is all five of them. That's okay. What's $25.
Okay, yeah. Oh, it's... Wow. Yeah, that's going to get pricey if there are additional Challenge Packs, and assuming there will be because it says Challenge Pack 1.
Yeah, this is just the first character of Challenge Pack 1. So this is DLC character number 1 from... This makes
you can't buy him as a standalone.
Yes, you can for $6.
Oh, okay. See, yeah. Whew. Yeah, that's going to get pricey. I wonder how many of their challenge packs there'll be overall.
I don't know. People weren't even sure that there was going to be any challenger packs, but the fact that they're calling it Challenger Pack 1 leads people to believe that there might be more characters coming after the initial 5.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of just seems...
We'll see. Anyway, after that was a Game of the Year montage and performance. That was a really cool performance.
Incredible performance.
Indeed. And then they announced Game of the Year, which went to...
Not Red Dead.
God of War.
I was very surprised after Red Dead sweeped everything else. You were just well, this is a given.
when they showed the Game of the Year award, I wrote down Red Dead Redemption 2, just expecting it to have won. And I had to go back and edit my notes.
I didn't get that unruly, but I was fully expecting to be like, I had hopes for Celeste, like against all odds, and I didn't even play it. I remember when it came out, you asked me if I wanted to review it. And I was like, no, there's no way my hands could handle that game. and I was right. But I just really wanted to see an indie run away with it and just be like, fuck y'all. But God of War, I've said it. It deserved it. It was a good game. But I've actually seen a few people kind of up in arms that exclusive games can win Game of the Year.
I don't have a problem with it. If it's the best game of the year, it's the best game of the year, no matter what platform or platforms it's on.
Yeah, I think that just falls back to our standard fare of exclusivity is bad anyway. But I don't think you should block first party.
I'm against third party exclusives. First party exclusives need to exist because that's what pushes platforms.
Yeah.
But third party exclusives need to stop.
But I can kind of see the argument of it's sad that Game of the Year can't be played by everybody if you only have one console. But at the same time, like you, first party, I'm a little more okay with. Yeah. And it is a shame I can't play God of War.
You just got to get a PS4.
I'm not going to get a PS4. I haven't even had the chance to upgrade to a 1X yet. But you know, I can see the argument, even though I don't necessarily agree with it. God of War, from what I did see of it, looked like it was a great game. What I did get tickled when the voice actors for Kratos and what's the kid's name?
The boy. I don't remember.
Yeah, boy. And when he did the voice, read it, boy. I was just like,
read it, boy.
That's funny. Also, his outfit was amazing.
It was.
I was every time he was up there, I just wanted to read his shirt again.
I'm trying to remember. Isn't it? I think Christopher Knight, maybe.
I think so.
I can't remember.
He stood out. It was incredible.
Read it, boy.
It was funny. I laughed. He is very well aware he is a meme, and he was okay with it.
Yeah. Anyway, those were the Game Awards. That only took us an hour 15.
Yeah, David just sent me a text and was like, are you done? And I was like, not even close. That's why I paused there at a second. I was like,
we're not even done with news because we got more news. I'm going to try going through this fairly quick. New backward compatibility additions for the week include The Darkness, The Bureau, XCOM Declassified, and Game of the Year, Duke Nukem Forever.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a joke about Game of the Year.
Yeah.
THQ Nordic's buying spree has continued with the acquisition of the Carmageddon franchise.
THQ is on a roll.
Indeed. On Monday, Bethesda tweeted out that they are finalizing plans to have canvas bags manufactured for Power Armor Edition buyers. It is a good move on them to do the right thing and provide what was promised. And then they proceeded to fuck up further by somehow making the entire list of claims available to some users for a short time.
Yeah, there was sensitive information in that too, with like names and addresses. Like yep, at this point, they might as well just give out your social security number and your firstborn child. And
how does Bethesda manage to fuck up so much with this situation?
This is hilarious. You know, do you remember at E3 when we were like, man, Bethesda's on a roll. They're killing it. And then they killed it all right.
Yeah.
Rip. Yes. It's like they just straight up just nuked everything they did earlier this year. And you're like, oh, yeah. Guys, why?
All that goodwill.
Are you trying to get acquired? What are you doing? Anyway. Man.
Anyway, Starbreeze, the makers of Payday 2 and Overkill's The Walking Dead, as well as the publisher for Psychonauts 2, has filed for bankruptcy reconstruction and their CEO has resigned. They were apparently also raided by Swedish authorities for suspicions of insider trading, so things are going really well over there.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Yeah, apparently they raided a bunch of stuff. Someone got arrested. That? I don't know many more details, but it makes you wonder if things are going to be okay with Psychonauts 2.
Like, do you root for them to get acquired in that case? Can we save this? Because I know people are excited for Psychonauts. And was Overkill's Walking Dead even any good? Like, I wanted it, but I haven't even heard anything about it since it launched.
I think that's a sign of how well the game is doing, is that no one's really heard much about it. People didn't bitch
about it. Okay. I can roll with that.
Either that or just no one bought it.
Oh, I don't know. It looked badass. I wanted to play it, and I just, again, we hear it all the time. I bitch about it. I just don't have time for that shit.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe next year when it hits consoles, we'll be able to cover it.
Yes. Is that your news? Are you done?
I got one more thing, and that is new Game Pass additions. This past week, Strange Brigade was added to Game Pass. Just today, Ashen and Mortal Kombat X were added to Game Pass.
Was it?
Yep.
Oh, Suda's in for it now.
On the 11th, Kingdoms 2 Crowns will be added to Game Pass. On the 13th, PES 19 and Spin Tires Mud Runner are going to be added to Game Pass.
Oh.
On the 14th, Below is being added to Game Pass. On the 17th, Hellblade is being added to Game Pass. And on the 20th, Ori and the Blind Forest and Shadow Warrior 2 are both being added to Game Pass.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, pretty much. Game Pass is fucking killing it.
If you don't have Game Pass, I don't know why.
especially because you were able to buy 6 months for $30.
I think you still can.
Or you could buy a year for $70.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's such a good deal.
Yeah, it is absolutely worth every penny. And it's worth it for Ashen alone. Ashen is a $40 game. You could buy 4 months of Game Pass for the same price.
Yeah.
Or you could buy 6 months of Game Pass for $10 cheaper.
Yeah. And then just play literally the fuck out of everything under the sun. There is so much variety in Game Pass at this point that I'm blown away by it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my news. What do you have? Quick.
EA pulled Kareem Hunt from Madden 2019.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
The best part is people who had him in their lineup, now it just says halfback number 25. He was replaced with a totally generic fill-in with all the same stats.
Good. Fuck him for being a woman abuser.
Yes, fuck that guy. He was also removed from Ultimate Team lineup, so he is just out. Fuck him. Next. Epic Games, they're being sued by 2 Milli for including the Milli Rock and the Fortnite dances.
Yeah, that's not going to go anywhere.
It's not, but good on them. At least people are starting to be like, you know what, that's kind of shitty that they're not compensating the artists to come up with these dances before they include them. And I hope that other developers take notice and compensate these people because you're taking their intellectual property. Gamesindustry.biz recognized the Xbox Adaptive Team as their People of the Year.
Oh, that's cool.
That is fantastic. I would have liked to see more of that at the Game Awards. But carry on. And then also we've talked about the Epic Game Store. They are taking a swipe at Steam with their 88/12 developer pay. And also, if you sell a game made with Epic's engine on the Epic Game Store, you do not have to pay the royalties for those.
Oh, that's
sales.
Neat.
That is pretty big deal. Clearly, they are reinvesting their Fortnite monies wisely. But it will be interesting to see how it shakes up because, like I said, they did a pretty shitty move with Ashen and basically threw money at it to kind of take a hit at Xbox. So it'll be interesting to see what other shakeups come out of that.
Yeah.
Also, Xbox Game Pass, Phil Spencer has said he would like to see it come to every device, including mobile, with the use of xCloud streaming. So
that would be interesting.
There's a lot going on with Game Pass far beyond just the influx of games and the variety of games. We've seen Play Anywhere titles already hit Game Pass. And so in a way, it already affects PC in that if you have games, in fact, when I got my computer, I went in to go download a few of my Play Anywhere titles, see if I could run them, and ta-da, there was Forza Horizon, and then I was like, forgot I could do that.
There you go.
But yeah, it's interesting to see if they can use xCloud and carry it on and take it to mobile as well.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Anything else?
How did we not talk about the Soulja game?
The what?
Joe, you call yourself a game podcaster.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Soulja Boy released a game console.
Oh, that. Okay.
Yeah, it's called the Soulja game, and there's a handheld and a console. And
it's basically a piracy box.
You could buy it for $34 on AliExpress.
Yeah.
But he is selling it for $149 for the handheld, although it was on sale for $99. At launch, and the console was $199 on sale for $149. Again, I found it on AliExpress for $56.
Yeah.
So they are basically emulators, and the handheld has 3,000 games. And
yeah, that's going to get shut down pretty quick.
Console has 800. Good luck to them. But he is basically a laughingstock at this point. That's I don't know. That's not going to fly. But it was funny. There was a Twitter moment. And I was sad when it like blew up and came a Twitter moment because I saw the very first tweet of it. And nobody had really talked about it. And I was like scribbling it down. I was like, I hope that stays quiet so I can talk about it on the show. And everybody be like, what? It happened though. It blew up as it should have. It was hilarious. But yeah, if you really want that ROM and emulator or whatever it's called when it runs like that, it's on AliExpress. It's $34. Save yourself some money.
Yeah. Or just don't pirate.
Or just don't pirate. Although you have to laugh at the screenshots that are like, they have Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
In the screenshot. And you're like, no, that's not got Tomb Raider on it. Sorry, guys. Keep trying. But yeah. And that's it. That's all I have. I'm good now.
All right. You ready to do reviews? Because you said you have an hour left.
I have an hour left and I'm about to crack open a pop because my mouth is dry.
And we have 8 games to talk about.
Oh, God.
It's
a rough week.
First game to talk about is called Darksiders 3, developed by Gunfire Games, published by THQ Nordic, released November 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Return to an apocalyptic Earth in Darksiders 3, a hack-and-slash action-adventure where players assume the role of Fury in her quest to hunt down and dispose of the 7 deadly sins. The most enigmatic of the 4 horsemen, Fury must bring balance to the forces that now ravage Earth. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is my first experience with Darksiders. I actually have the other games, but I haven't played them. I have the War Master Edition. I just never even installed it, I don't think. So this is kind of a harsh way to like get thrown into the series. But at the same time, I never really felt like I was lost or anything. Each of the Darksiders games, if you haven't played them like me, they focus on one of the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. In this case, it is Fury. I guess they gave different horsemen because that's not the horsemen that I'm familiar with. But we have Fury for this go around. There's been a war between the angels and demons that has basically just destroyed all there is on Earth, and humans are damn near extinct. You will find some humans here and there, but there's just not very many of us. We got fucked. And Fury takes every swipe at humans she can for just being weak, miserable things. She just... Fury is one of those just amazing characters that just gives no fucks. She's just fed up with everybody's shit. Some of her lines can be a little cheesy, but for the most part, I just found myself going, I see a lot of myself in Fury. I thought she was a really cool character. Gameplay-wise, this is kind of an open world, but most of it feels like it's just kind of rooms connected with hallways, if you will. You can't fast travel. There's like a portal that you can go through and pop you up in different areas. It's not an open world in like an Assassin's Creed kind of way, though. So it's more semi-open. But you can just like go from area to area and explore. I didn't really find a lot of reason to do that, though. There are a few collectibles, but I was more interested in just trying to get through the game and see the 7 deadly sins. Most of the environment kind of feels a little generic because it is just, it's post-apocalyptic, war-torn Earth. There's busted up cars and destroyed buildings, and that's kind of it. The enemies felt a little generic as well, but the 7 deadly sins themselves were actually really cool. Like, there was a lot of thought and design went into these kind of characters, and I just really enjoyed, like, I was more interested in busting my ass to get to go see the next sin and how it was portrayed, so I enjoyed those a lot more. Hack and slash gameplay, you just press X a lot. you can if you're careful, you can dodge and kind of pair like a dodge with a counterattack, and those were so cool. There are a lot of different weapon upgrades and stuff, but I just kind of preferred the chain of scorn and just literally whipping the shit out of people with a chain that looks like vertebrae. It's a really interesting character design. I did have one complaint as far as the combat goes. It was really easy to chain things together and it all worked really well, but you can hold the, I think it was the left bumper, not the left trigger. One of them to Target. And I found that no matter what I did, what kind of circumstance I was in, it always wanted to target an enemy that was far as fuck away. And since I was using the chain, like, that shit had limit. And if there's two enemies behind me beating the shit out of me, I don't care about the one that's on the other side of the arena that I can't even get to. I would have liked for the targeting to focus a little more on the enemies that were closer to you, maybe help you spin around and get to those instead. It just didn't do that. And I found it to be more problematic than helpful. There isn't any kind of mini map for the game. There is a compass at the top and there's a red skull, which basically, like, as long as you stay center and move as center as you can toward that skull, you're going to end up going to the bosses. But it can be a little difficult to get lost. One instance, I was really frustrated. I was trying to get to that goddamn skull, but I couldn't see that underneath a bus in the corner of the arena was a tiny little hole you had to fall in because the boss is underground. And I'm sitting there like walking and going, I don't get it. I can't get up there yet. I don't know what I'm doing. And like, I sat there for the longest time. I got pissed. I shut the game off. I went and played something else. I come back and I'm still just wandering around before I just accidentally fell in the hole. And then I stood there and I was like, I'm dumb. But some kind of map to maybe point out the exits would have been nice. I know that they make the joke, you know, that it's not even a joke, but it's kind of like a throwaway comment. They're like, oh, it was easy to find the first one. The other sins won't be so easy to find. And I was like, it didn't have to be that hard. just a dot to say, go, a sign pointing down. Take a cue from another game I'm going to review later. A sign pointing down would have been nice.
Yeah.
something to let me know the hole was there. Other than that, it was a lot of fun. There was a problem with micro freezes. When you would go from one area to the next, there would be like a little save and the game would kind of have like a micro freeze. There was a patch. I was supposed to review this last week. And there was a patch right before the review, and I was like, let me wait and see if this fixed that.
Yeah.
It didn't.
No.
And it's not as severe, but it does still freeze up. And there's an odd, like, visual glitch that occurs to the character during these little freezes. Like, I'm sitting there, like, holding my breath, going, please don't crash the game. Please don't crash the game.
That's weird.
because she gets almost kind of pixely and kind of like a motion blur look to her during these freezes, and then it's done saving and you can carry on. And I'm just like, what a weird thing. When it comes to these THQ Nordic games, and not any kind of way am I trying to downplay what they do. They make really good games, but they don't necessarily have quite AAA quality. And so I went into it expecting that. I know a lot of other people panned it, that a lot of other reviewers have been really hard on Darksiders and say, oh, it's not good. It just sucks. I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, even though it was a little more on the generic as far as the base enemies went. But that glitch was just a super pain in my ass. And it was a little disappointing. I hope that they patch that at some point. Yeah. And I was really hoping that the patch last week fixed it, and I was sad that it did not. Otherwise, like I said, I had a lot of fun. I just went in and beat the shit out of things and kind of laughed at Fury's cheesy, quirky lines and had a good time.
So basically, you appreciate the game for what it is instead of what it's not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's got the $60 price tag, but, you know, not everything has to be Battlefield and Call of Duty quality.
No.
You know, you can still just enjoy a game and laugh at it and just smash. You know, I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It as far as gameplay went, it reminded me a lot of, like, the movement and the way you move around the world reminded me of Prince of Persia. And yeah. The gameplay reminded me of old school Devil May Cry, where you just go and beat the shit out of stuff and enjoy it.
Well, then overall, $60 on it. What do you think of it?
I do give it a really recommend to try it. I hope that they smooth out that save issue and that it's something that they work on, because that's really my biggest complaint, was just it freezes up and you don't know if it's going to crash and it looks awful when it does it. Yeah. But besides that, it's fun. I enjoyed it.
Jesus Ninja was asking if I'm still going to buy the $400 edition of the game.
We did not get enough biddies for that. Step it up.
I did not get enough biddies to buy a $400 game. Maybe one day.
Get with it.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Asterisk. God, I hate this word. Asterisk and Obelix XXL2, developed by Osum Studio, published by Microids, released November 29th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $49.99, Steam for $29.99. Where has Getafix gone? The Gaulish village is in an uproar. They must find out the truth. Always ready for a fight, Asterisk and Obelix are sent to Rome on a mission to buy their chief vital statistics. I love the names in this game. There they find a new amusement park, Las Vegas, built by the famous Roman emperor. To what end? What is Getafix hiding? The game starts off with Getafix tricking fellow elders into a coup with Julius Caesar. The only two who can help save the day are Asterix and Obelix. And they go off to a theme park of Wonderland of Las Vegas to investigate the disappearance and beat the shit out of a ton of Romans. Right off the bat, I appreciate how the cutscenes are handled in the game, given this is a remaster / remake of an older game. The original cutscenes were used, and we know how that always works out, where they're just pixely and ugly and everything else, because they're blown up to fit a full screen, but they're like 480p videos, and they look like shit. Yes, no?
Yes. Sorry. I was reading, and I didn't realize you were directly talking to me.
Yes, I'm trying to engage with you.
I'm sorry. I was actually trying to engage with chat.
Anyway, instead of blowing them up to fill the whole screen and look really shitty, they're windowed and they look a lot better. It's a shame that the windows are so small, but I would rather have that, like the windowed videos, and have fairly decent good quality instead of super super pixelated videos playing. So that was a plus for me. Gameplay is fairly basic. It consists of using your variety of attacks to take out the Romans, solve a few puzzles, rinse, repeat, all that fun stuff. While this could easily get boring if the rest of the game didn't hold up that well, thankfully that's not the case with this one. The writing is really entertaining, though given the fact that it's a remake, you could tell that the humor was designed for a different era. You'll see tons of references to games like Splinter Cell and Super Mario Sunshine. So that kind of gives you an idea of the age of the game. Thankfully, I was a gamer during that era, so all the references connected with me, and I really enjoyed them.
What the fuck is Super Mario Sunshine?
Easily, though, some of the references could get lost on gaming newcomers, so that could be a mixed bag. Combat flows really well. You have your standard attack button, grab button, special move button. It comes down to just simple button mashing and combos. For those who take their time, though, there's a decent system that can reward specific combos that you do in the game with power-ups and bonuses. Even cooler is that the combos can be strung between the two characters. So you could start a combo on the one character, throw the character, hit the button to swap characters, and continue the combo with the other character, which is pretty cool. And then if you follow the button prompts, you'll get rewarded with power-ups, bonuses, stuff like that. Each of the two characters has their own distinct feel in the game. Asterix is smaller and quicker, can fit in tight spots, etc. Obelix is bigger, slower, stronger, can destroy some obstacles. I can't talk today. Given it's been almost 2 hours, I kind of blame the Game Awards.
It's a good blame.
Yeah,
I'll allow it.
It was fun swapping between them in combat, especially when it involved the combos that I mentioned earlier. It's just fun to mix it up, and it makes the combat feel more rewarding. It is not all good news, though. First, it's a 3D platformer, so it seems almost automatic at this point, but the camera is not that great.
What?
Yeah, shocking, I know. It can function decently enough in wide open areas, but once you get into tight spots, it can be a nightmare. Either it's zoomed in too much, so it's like right up on your ass, or it could get caught behind walls, it could get stuck on walls. All the greatest hits are there. But if you don't expect a somewhat janky camera controls in a 3D platformer anymore, I don't know what to tell you. It's not the worst camera I've seen in a game, but it's also not anything special, that's for sure. It's a 3D camera. What are you going to do? Yeah. Hit detection can be a bit off. Plenty of times I'll feel like I'm hitting something and I'm just completely missing. I feel like I could be clipping into a box, hit attack, and still miss. And in a game that requires a lot of combat, it can get you in trouble. There have been plenty of times where I feel I'm punching enemies and I'm just whiffing, and then they kick my ass instead. So that could be a bit of a bummer. That said, some of the battles are just endless waves of enemies, and it can be a bit much. I found myself saying a few times, just come on, you could stop feeding me enemies now, please, thank you, any day now.
You don't want to just mindlessly bash people?
It's fun, but sometimes you just want to move on with the story.
You find the end, yeah.
Yeah. But if you enjoy the mindless combat, there are challenge areas which are new to the game with this version and are basically just waves of enemies coming at you to earn more helmets, which are the in-game currency. They could be used to buy health, shields, upgrades for your character or for your dog that follows you around, collectible figurines, achievements. If you collect all like 9,999 helmets, you get an achievement for that. Anyway, I mentioned challenge rooms are new. There are some other new additions as well. There are hidden collectible postcards to find. The figures in the shop are new. And there's also a fast travel system, which is new to the game, which is a positive when you're trying to get around. Final big gripe I have about the game is the price. On Steam, the game is $29.99, which feels great for this game.
Okay.
Console is $49.99.
Whoa.
I can understand an extra $10 for a console tax, which we see quite often.
Yeah.
$20 more for consoles is just wrong. I don't get why it's so much more expensive on console. I think the $30 price tag on Steam is perfect. $50 is just, I don't get it.
That is steep.
Yeah. Overall, though, I still give the game a recommended try. It's fun, it's enjoyable, but that price tag needs to come down before I can give it an all-out buy it.
So wait for a sale.
Yes.
Okay.
Next game to talk about is called Mutant Year Zero Road to Eden, developed by the Bearded Ladies, published by Funcom, released December 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $34.99. Also launched direct to Game Pass. The humans are all gone. Scavenging through the remains of civilization are the mutants, deformed humanoids, and animals alike, searching for salvation or just something to eat. To survive, you and your companions must venture out to explore the zone. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is one of those games where you go into it and you're just like, I don't know why, but I am still playing this 74 hours later. It just kind of comes out of nowhere at you. I expected that I was going to be into this game, but I didn't think I was just going to find myself sitting there mindlessly playing it for an obscene amount of time. So this is a turn-based exploration game. There's been nuclear war, some kind of nuclear accident. Shit's gone wrong, and it's an apocalypse, and somehow we have mutant animals. Namely, as the characters that we play as, who are Dux and Bormann. Dux is obviously a mutated duck. And Bormann is a boar that looks like a man, but is a pig. What? Imagine that. Not a lot of creativity went into these names, but that's okay. Cause there's a shit ton of creativity everywhere else, just from the character design to the world. It's really intriguing, and you can just easily get lost in it. That is also its downfall. You can easily get lost. Again, I don't know what it is with no navigational tools in games this week. But there is nothing in the way of a mini-map or any kind of navigation. So when you're out exploring, and you have to explore because you need to find scrap and materials to survive and to progress, especially if you want to upgrade so that you don't get fucked by the harder enemies, then you need to just go out looking for them as you carry on with the actual missions. But you might find yourself going off the beaten path looking for some scrap and then realize you have no fucking idea where you are or how you get back to where you need to be. I found myself going in circles a lot. I'm easily lost in the first place. I've got the sense of direction of like a moldy potato. So it was just hopeless from the start, but there's nothing to kind of guide you back. Now you can pull, again, I can't remember if it's the trigger or the bumper I was using. It's just that kind of day, but you can pull either the left trigger or the left bumper one. Will like kind of pop up with some arrows and it'll say, okay, this way to Eden. But again, they don't actually point to the actual exits. They just more in the general direction. Like if you wander that way long enough, you're going to find yourself going one direction or the other. And a lot of times, if you haven't been to the area yet, it'll just have question marks. So you still don't know where the fuck you're going. It can be a little bit frustrating. For the actual gameplay, there's a lot of tactical stealth combat. It's turn-based, RPG-style play. I just really loved the gameplay combat mechanic for this. Just when you approach an area where there are enemies, the enemies are called stalkers. When you approach this kind of enemy, they'll be scattered around in the area, and you can see, like, they have an alert zone, and it will glow red if that area they can see you. If there are objects, you can hide behind, like, rocks, fences, a dresser, whatever the fuck is out in the open that you can hide behind, then that area of their alert zone will be white. If you turn off your flashlight and you kind of crouch and sneak around, you can get to these areas if you're carefully, and you can set yourself up in such a way that you can ambush the enemies. It may or may not work out for you. And even though there are difficulty settings where, you know, you can do normal, you can do hard, you can do straight up fucking permadeath if you really hate yourself.
For the masochists,
because oh my god, you're gonna die. Even though there's the difficulty levels, like I played it on the easiest mode, which is just normal, and that shit was still really fucking hard. I died a lot.
Nice.
There's a lot of trial and error. It's a heavy learning curve. You want to learn how to maneuver your characters. You do start with just Dux and Borman. You do eventually find additional crew members later on, though. And you want to, like, learn how to maneuver them around so that you're catching enemies as they come out one by one, and you're taking them out stealthily and in one shot so that you're not alerting the rest of the group and just getting totally fucked over. That's a lot easier to talk about doing than actually doing. But I did enjoy it. And even when I did die, I was just like, I saw right away where I fucked up and could do it differently the next time.
Yeah.
And even then, the next tactic might not have worked and I might still fucking die. I don't know how anybody's going to play this on permadeath. I really don't. Because magic. If they do it, they're hackers, and that's just all there is to it. especially because the enemies, they scale with you as you level up. You can very easily be level 5 and run up on enemies that are 55 if you're not careful. You have to learn to just straight up know when to avoid some fights. And just shrug off and go, well, that's just the way that cookie crumbles. there's just as much hit and miss as knowing when to fold them and when to hold them, if you will, to use the old adage. But I had a lot of fun with it, and even though I was dying a lot, I would just start over. The checkpoints are incredibly forgiving. I will say I haven't made it to the end, so I did some research to see what other people were saying about the end, and it seems that maybe the ending is not quite as satisfactory, and it feels like it kind of just drops off. So I don't know if maybe there's potential for a sequel, and that may be in the works or something, but maybe. It did seem like it was a consensus that maybe the ending was not as satisfying. satisfying as it could have been. For what I played, though, I enjoyed it and I was having a lot of fun. I'm a little concerned I'm going to be let down now.
Well, overall, $35 on it. What do you think?
It's definitely a buy it, and also it's in Game Pass. So at the very least, try it out for free if you have Game Pass.
Very true.
And if you like any kind of tactical games, if you like strategy and planning, you're probably going to enjoy this. The strategy aspect of it is carried out really well.
Nice. Good next, stuff.
Speaking of dicks.
Next game to talk about is called Gungrave VR Loaded Coffin Edition, developed by Iggy Mob, published by Marvelous and Xseed. It released December 7th on PlayStation VR for $39.99 and includes the standalone expansion Gungrave UN. I believe the game itself can be purchased for $29.99 standalone, and the expansion might be $19.99 or $14.99. I don't recall all the pricing off the top of my head. I just know the bundle's $39.99. Many years have passed since the war among the nefarious drug Seed. Mika Asagi lived a quiet life watching over the undead soldier Grave, who returned to his slumber. Those halcyon days ended suddenly as South City turned into a war zone torn apart by org men, humans infected with Seed. To restore hope to South City, Mika and Grave throw themselves back into battle. Gungrave is a third-person action VR game, obviously. You are Grave, again, obviously, and it is your job to save the world and yada, yada, yada. Mostly you're there to shoot the shit out of enemies, which you will do in droves.
Nice. Shooting the shit out of enemies.
Shooting the shit out of enemies is fun, especially when it plays as well as this game does.
Nice.
First things first, the game looks great. Grave is nicely detailed, looks like a brute. Surroundings aren't anything mind-blowing, but they look good, and nothing is a cheap feel to it, if you know what I mean. How some games just kind of look kind of plasticky and generic. And it looked crisp, which is hard to do with VR. Like, normally you get kind of like a screen door fuzzy effect to it, but everything looked really crisp in this game.
VR has a lot of motion blur issues, doesn't it?
Yes. So. Yes, it does. gameplay revolves around you running around mostly in arena style areas, shooting the shit out of enemies. Like I mentioned, there is free movement, which, you use the controller for. I'll get to that in a second, but sadly there is no free looking in the game. When you hit the right analog stick, it snaps, I don't know, like 25 degrees, something like that. Instead of, you know, holding the stick and slowly panning around, it just jumps in degrees. So there's no kind of smooth movement to rotating. I can understand why they did it, because Lord knows I've had my VR sickness issues, but it just felt clunky and inconvenient, especially when you wanted to turn the camera quickly and you're trying to tap an analog stick repeatedly, which just doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
You play the game with the controller. I don't know if there was move support in the game. I really didn't mess with it. I just know you play the game with the controller, you run around with the analog stick, you shoot with the trigger. The best part is aiming. You aim by just looking at the enemies. So if, you know, the head detection with the VR headset, there's a crosshair on the screen and you just aim where you want to aim by staring at the enemies, and you just pull the trigger and shoot. Enemy variety is decent. Everybody looks the same among the enemy types. Like, there's gunners. All the gunners are going to look the same, but those guys are going to look different than, like, the electro whip carrying ladies. Mutant dogs are going to look like mutant dogs, but they're all going to look the same. So the enemies look the same, but there's a decent variety, if that makes sense.
Sounds like my same thing, like I was saying about Darksiders, where they're just kind of generic after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Plenty of mini bosses as well through the stages. One of the downsides, there's only 5 stages in the game. Some of them go by pretty quickly as well, but thankfully the expansion includes an extra 3 stages, and there are 3 difficulty levels, so you do get a decent amount of game for the price. Plus, when you inevitably die, you get to replay the full stage. That's another downside, by the way, despite the fact that there are some very clear checkpoint-esque loading breaks and transitions in the game. Mm-hmm. If you die, you start back over at the beginning. So if you get to the last boss fight of a level and you die because you just had to fight through a bunch of waves of enemies and you couldn't find a goddamn health pickup, you get sent back to the beginning of the level. It would have been nice to see checkpoints, but I get that the game wants to kick your ass as much as it wants you to kick ass, which, by the way, it tells you at the start of every level to go kick some ass. Another big gripe, loading times. The initial load to this game was obscenely long. It felt like a minute. I just sat there waiting for the game to load. Some of the transitions are a bit quicker, but the load times in general are pretty, pretty brutal in this one. Overall, it's not really a bad game. I did have some gripes with it, but it's fast-paced, plenty of fun. Price feels a bit steep for what's there, but obviously there's the VR tax. I think knocking $10 off the overall price tag, making it $30 for the full bundle of everything would have been ideal. But obviously, I don't know the finances behind the game, so I can't make any kind of comment there. I just wish it wasn't as pricey as it is, but I say that about every VR game for the most part. I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was just agreeing. Like, VR is not cheap. It's just genuinely expensive.
Yeah. All said, though, I still give the game a try. It's just too much mindless fun with just a side dish of frustration. I had a good time with it, and I plan on playing it and the expansion plenty more. So overall, try it.
Sounds good.
Next game to talk about is called Subnautica, developed and published by Unknown Worlds Entertainment, released December 4th out of early access on Xbox One and Steam, as well as launching on PS4 for $24.99. Descend into the depths of an alien underwater world filled with wonder and peril. Craft equipment, pilot submarines, and outsmart wildlife to explore lush coral reefs, volcanoes, cave systems, and more, all while trying to survive. Cole, tell us about it.
So, that's pretty good summary right there. It covers a lot of it. I don't think the developers of this game intentionally made a horror game, but they made a horror game.
I heard that they made a horror game.
Yeah. I'm terrified of water. I don't even know how to swim. I don't like large bodies of water in any way whatsoever. Despite my love of fishing, it's really a terrible thing. But, This game's scary if you're afraid of water like that. You start off, well, first off, you start off deciding which mode you're going to play because there's four to choose from. You can play the survival mode, which forces you to monitor your oxygen, your food, your water, and your health, but it greets you with a story. Then there's freedom, which is basically like survival mode on easy. You don't have to worry about food and water. But, and you still get to play the story, but you do have to monitor your health and your oxygen usage. Then there's a permadeath mode because, again, people are masochists. I'm sure there's people who love that. Not me, not today. And then there's creative where you can just go in and not have to worry about shit and get to play and enjoy yourself. I played the story, but I would, if I'm playing not for review, I'm just going to play on creative because fuck the ocean. As far as the story goes, your ship has crashed out of orbit. You've landed on this planet that is literally just water everywhere. It's all ocean. All the biomes are underwater. I will say, given the fact that everything is limited to being underwater, there is some serious diversity in these biomes, and it is incredible what this team has done. You have the more peaceful waters where you start off at, where everything seems like you're going to be okay. It's fine. But it doesn't take very long before you find yourself in like just as these overgrown kelp forests where it's just dark and you're not really sure if you're going to be okay anymore. And those aren't even the scariest. Like, you think the kelp forest would be kind of scary because it's dark and you don't have a whole lot of visibility. No, what's scary is when you get into the open water and there's big shit coming for you. Like, you only swim so fucking fast. You do need to find materials, craft, and survive. If you're playing on normal mode, you need to find food, and you will have to fish, and you will have to repair your little life pod to the point that you can, you know, prepare food and basically just not get fucked every time you walk out of it. We are in 1.0 for Subnautica now. It is out of game preview mode. If you were playing it in game preview, your achievements for the game were retroactive.
That's good.
And whatever you had earned, you could keep. However, while it was in game preview mode, you had access to admin commands, and those are now gone. So if you didn't get your, there's only 17 achievements, but if you did not get them, rip you. You are not getting that shit with admin commands anymore. You have to do it the legit way. So expect the TA to spike on this one. The sound design for this game, though, as pretty as everything is, as bright and colorful and just incredible as the world and all the different biomes are, the sound design is what makes this game shine. I don't usually talk a whole lot about sound design. I don't hear well in my right ear. To me, like, whatever ambient noises are going on are just things. but when you go from being above water, you climb out of the life pod, it just struck me so, so intently. When you dive into the water for the first time and everything just becomes muffled and literally sounds like you're, even the game's music changes to sound like you're underwater, and it's scary if you're afraid of the water. It really is. But it stood out as, wow, they really thought about this. And even as you change biomes, as you're exploring and you're going to all these different places, you know, the way that the sound travels when you're in the kelp and the way that it becomes more muffled because of the absorbency of the kelp versus when you're out in the open water and, like, there are just these big lumbering beasts, you know, swimming around in the depths and the darkness underneath you, and you can just hear their groaning and their communication, and you're like, oh shit, I'm gonna die. Thank God I'm not on permadeath mode. But it just really stood out to me as how well of a job that they did with the sound design in this. I think it would have been really easy to just take the easy way out as far as sound, be like, well, you're underwater. You know, you don't hear anything except for the occasional glug glug of you drowning when you run out of oxygen. But they went all out and they really put some serious detail into that, and it is appreciated. I had a fantastic time with this game. I was really impressed. I didn't expect so much to happen. I went into this thinking it's survival and I'm going to build shit and I'm going to have a party and I'm going to be a little sad that I'm playing solo. And I was. I understand why the game is solo, but I still go into these kind of survival games like, I just want a friend to build shit with. And I would like to see maybe an addition of some, even if you could just have one person in co-op creative, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But other than that, I thought it was fantastic. It's incredibly well done.
Cool.
And go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I'm going to give it a buy it, and I wasn't even going to wait for you to ask me what I thought. Then you cut me off, so then I have to wait for you to ask me what I thought.
But fine, then. $25, what do you think?
It's definitely a buy it. But again, I would like to, I wish that I could play it with a friend. Wait, two people could fit in that fucking pod.
Maybe one day.
Maybe. If I fuss about it enough.
Who knows? Maybe. Just maybe. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Arca's Path, developed by Dream Reality Interactive, published by Rebellion, released December 4th on PlayStation VR, Vive, Oculus, and Windows Mixed Reality for $19.99. Trapped in the enchanting simulated world of Arca, it's up to you to find a path through the labyrinth and break free. With intuitive hands-free gameplay, Arca's Path is an atmospheric VR gaming experience. That is correct. This game is entirely hands-free.
Wow.
Yeah. Arca's Path is a really unique puzzle platformer, mostly platformer, really, but there are some unique puzzle aspects in the levels. The game starts off with you in a desolate world, having trash dropped on you from an airplane flying overhead. And among the trash, there's this cool little headset that your character puts on, and that is where the game takes place, in the virtual world of Arca. Like I said, gameplay is entirely hands-free. You look at a circle on the level to summon an orb that you need to guide to the end of the level, and again, all hands-free. The further away you look from the ball, the faster in that direction it's going to travel. So the ball moves where you're looking, and you need to guide it through paths, across jumps, down ramps, through breakable walls, all that kind of fun jazz. It's a really, really unique way to play a game, not needing a controller at all. I will say getting the hang of moving the ball was easy enough, but some of the later levels will push your brain and your patience to the limit because the game gets hard really quick, too. Levels start easy enough with walls to guide you and wide areas to maneuver, but things get crazy quick with narrower paths and no walls and falling to your death repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly.
So you're trying to tell me you died?
Yeah, I died quite a bit.
A lot.
Shockingly, it took me quite a while before I got the trophy for dying 5 times on one level, though. So I'm proud of myself for that. 25 levels in the game, broken up by cutscenes every couple of levels to show the story. And everything in this game is absolutely gorgeous. Even the levels that are made out of trash and made to look ugly still somehow look stunning. And the way that the levels just pop into being is really, really cool. As you travel along, the scenery in the levels just pop up around you, and it is a really, really cool effect. Almost makes me wish I didn't have to focus on the ball and I could just look around freely the entire time. Then, of course, there is a free look mode. You can hold down on the touchpad on the controller because, yes, you actually can use the controller at some points. Not to move or anything, but for stuff like this, you hold down on the touchpad for a few seconds and it lets you just stop and free look around the level. So you could plot out the course that you want to take or make a plan so you know where you're going, what you're doing, look for the collectibles in the levels, stuff like that. Hold the touchpad again to get back to the game and continue rolling along. I honestly found myself going to free look every now and then just to look around and admire the scenery. It is just a stunning looking game.
That sounds like something I would do.
It was beautiful. It really, this is one of the best looking VR games I've seen in terms of art design. It is just gorgeous, gorgeous game. Mentioned collectibles. There's gems to collect on every stage. Collecting them all unlocks a time trial, so you could try rushing through the stages a second or third or ninth time to get through it as quick as you can. Try snagging a gold medal time. Gems are scattered around, and given the branching paths of the stages, sometimes require multiple playthroughs to get them all, or you could just do what I did and collect them all on one path and kill yourself and go back to the checkpoint and get the other half. Because I'm a dick.
Wow.
The only penalty for dying in the game seems to be putting you back to the last checkpoint. Any gems that you collected stay collected, thankfully, and I didn't see anything regarding a death counter to embarrass you. The closest you get to any kind of shame for dying is that trophy for dying 5 times in the one level, which I amazingly didn't get on the first stage. Like I said, it took me quite a while. Overall, the game is a lot of fun and gorgeous to look at. I can't stress enough how beautiful this game is. Good number of levels. Some of them could take quite a while to get through. Some of the later stages I was playing could take 15 minutes to get through just one stage because of how complex they get. So for $20, there's plenty of content and a unique novel way to play. So I say buy it. It's a lot of fun. It is worth picking up and is a definite showcase to show off the PlayStation VR to your friends or whatever VR headset you have. And for once, I didn't have issues with the camera detecting the Move controllers because I didn't have to use any fucking controllers, just the headset. So
yay! Boosh. We know how much you love the camera and the Move controllers.
I know. I had zero issues. And same with Gungrave, because you just use the DualShock controller. I had no issues with movement detection or with losing sight of where I am or where the controllers are or jitteriness or anything because it was just the headset.
Nice.
So good shit. Next game to talk about is called Battle Princess Madeline, developed by Casual Bit Games, published by Casual Bit Games and Houndpit Games, released December 6th on Xbox One and PC, coming out December 13th on Switch and PS4 for $19.99. You're the princess, Battle Princess Madeline to be precise, in this pixel-perfect retro side-scroller as you set off to defeat evil with your ghostly canine companion Fritzy. Do you have what it takes to save your family, avenge your furry friend, and become the ultimate battle princess? Oh, did you have what it takes?
No.
Shocker.
Why is this so hard?
I don't know. You tell me.
This game is a very retro-inspired ghouls and goblins-like game. It's like everything about it just screams ghouls and goblins. And I remember playing that as a kid. I remember, like, I know people say, oh, that game was hard. I don't remember it being that hard. This shit was hard. I want to point out that I love the story that the game was made in conjunction with the developer's 7-year-old daughter, who is named Madeline. And so she wanted a game like this where she, this style of game, but where she was the hero. And so that's how this game came to be. I think that's an incredible story. I love that she was involved with it. I'm a little worried about the developer's willingness to kill her off so easily. the story plays very much like one of those kind of stories you read your kids that you order where, like, it's an already written story, but they insert your kid's name into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has that vibe going on with it. It even starts with a cut scene where the grandfather is reading the story to the little girl because she's homesick. She wants to play Buildycraft, but he wants to read her a story.
Buildycraft.
Buildycraft. Nice. I don't know if that's the Fortnite creative or if it's Minecraft anymore. but that's what she was playing. She didn't want to read the story in the game. But he reads it to her anyway, and of course she gets into it. The cutscenes have like this very Saturday morning cartoon style of art style to them with the cell shading and the flat animation look. It's really cool. There are scan lines though. And those fucked me up. I had to actually go into the settings and turn those off. Like, they were making me queasy. But they know these have to go. At least that I want to give them credit, though, because at least the option was there to turn them off.
Usually the option is to turn them on in games like this. So that's kind of weird that the default is on.
The default is on. So I did turn them off. I turned them off very quickly. I was like, ooh, this is harsh. Especially given that the game's retro art style is fine. It's something we see a lot. At this point, I've just gotten used to it that people make platformers and they go, look, it looks like, you know, 16-bit, 8-bit, whatever. There's something off about this one, though. Like, the motion doesn't feel as smooth. Something goes awry with the pixels, and I can't really put my finger on it, and I can't really explain it. But, like, you're playing it, and you're like, that's just not as crisp as it could be. There's something off. Like, it's motion blur on pixels or something.
Hmm.
I got used to it, but it just, like, the whole time I kept going, kind of squinting my eyes, like, why? it's a shame because gameplay-wise, it's actually really fun. And before I dart off onto the gameplay, I wanted to go back. The font style is clearly done in this, you know, 16-bit look. We see that a lot with the retro-inspired games, but usually they use an actual, like, serif font that's got smooth edges and everything. This looks like they pixeled it in, which would be all well and good, but it's really hard to read. And they use it for all of the dialogue boxes, and I kind of found myself, like, just looking for keywords that I could pick out to understand what was being asked, because sometimes it was super hard to read. Like, the more text there was, the more it was just like a giant blob of pixels. And that may just be a thing where I'm not used to reading something that looks like that and I struggled with it, or it may just genuinely be a bad design idea. I'm going to err to the second one, because I'm awesome. And clearly I would never just have a problem reading pixelated words.
No, never. Not at all.
But it was really hard to see, especially with the scan lines turned on. It was just 10 times worse. I would like to see them go in and clean that up. They probably won't. I mean, it's clearly a design decision, I'm assuming, but it's not easy to read, and a clear, like, legitimate pixelated font would look a lot better.
Yeah.
For the gameplay, it is a platformer. It is, like I said, Ghouls and Goblins style. You can press X and spam it to throw spears and daggers and things like that at the enemies that are coming at you. The story is really creative and kind of cute, but there's not, again, we're back in minimap hell and you're going to get lost. It is a semi-open world and you can fast travel around to certain areas after a point, but short of the occasional arrow on a wooden sign pointing up, down, left, or right, you don't really ever, oh my God, my redneck fell out.
Yeehaw.
You don't ever really know where you're trying to go. You just kind of stumble into the right area. I beat the first boss and then I sat there and I was like, how did I even get here? I was just wondering and I just wound up at a boss. It was kind of frustrating. And then I was like, okay, but now how do I get back? it does help a little once you get the fast travel. But prior to that, and when you're trying to uncover the areas that you can fast travel to, you're just like, I'm just going to go left or I'm just going to go right and hope for the best. There is platforming. It's not really the key factor of the feature of the game. You're just jumping around sometimes. Yeah. which is fine. I think the onslaught of enemies is a little more of the focus, and again, that's fine too. But the instances where you do have to platform, the jumping could be a little tighter. There were times where I would be moving and I would hit the jump and she'd just walk right off the edge. Or I would jump and she would clearly have plenty of jump height or whatever to make it, and then she'd just fall flat down. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I constantly being eaten by these giant worms that are popping out of the ground? Why did this guy want to kill his daughter so much? What?
That's love.
I guess, I mean, we've talked about number three. but I really wish it was a little more responsive. If I push the jump button, jump. It gets a little complicated, especially in later levels when you need to make clear jumps to avoid rolling boulders or enemy onslaughts until you can get in a position where you can attack them back. It gets really frustrating when you're just constantly dying. I will say the checkpoint system, though, is fairly forgiving. And you can die a good 5 or 6 times before you are forced back to the beginning of the level.
That's good.
And you will, the respawn is damn near instant. But it could just stand to be just a little tighter. I think, though, that the odd thing is usually when you complain about controls being a little wonky, it's the shooting that's the problem, and aiming and actually firing and throwing your daggers and your spears and stuff, that was fine. That worked perfectly. It was just the jumping that was a pain in my ass.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, I had a really good time, and I thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm a little worried about the dev and his feeling toward his daughter.
Well, overall, $20, what do you think of it?
I do give it a recommended try. I'd like to see some patches and a little bit of work done to it, but it's a good time. And if you're into platformers and you're looking for a way to revisit a game like, you know, Ghouls and Goblins or what have you, then you're gonna be content.
Sounds good.
Yep.
And before we go on to the final game, shout out to No Time for Games for dropping 100 biddies.
Very nice of No Time. No Time is good people. I said that earlier, but it bears repeating.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, when I was streaming Rock Band the other day, Vertically Impaired dropped by and dropped his 9-month subscription.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's our baby.
That's, oh Lord.
Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Iris Fall, developed and published by Next Studio, released December 7th on Steam for $14.99. Solve clever puzzles and uncover an intriguing story full of mystery and wonder. With light and shadow as a core concept, Iris Fall takes players on a monochrome adventure unlike any other. Checking this one out, Dark Mika, she wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. Iris Fall is a puzzle game based on Light and Shadow. You play as a young girl named Iris. She awakens from a nightmare in what seems to be an orphanage and immediately sees a black cat. Since it's staring at her, she decides to follow out of the orphanage into the dark streets and off into a random magical building. This is why children don't get to do things. They don't think. I'm not sure how many of them have the capacity to even do that. In the magic building, the game really starts. You immediately are able to stand on certain books and transfer yourself from the real world to the shadow world, where you are, get this, a shadow. This allows you, seriously, this allows you to get places you otherwise wouldn't be able to. And you're doing this to follow some strange ass cat, because I honestly still don't know. There are a mix of puzzles. The main one is simply moving things so you can create a path. So when you enter the shadow world, you climb to another area to continue on. However, as you continue, each level has its own type of puzzle that's completely different. One involves you raising and lowering bridge parts that are connected to each other to get yourself to the other side. Another has you moving Rubik's cubes around to get light to shine onto doors. There's a few where you have to move objects to get them to look like what's seen in a shadow outline. Think of the shadow locks in Resident Evil 7. And that's just a handful of them. For me, the Rubik's cube ones were the biggest pains in the ass. Everything else is pretty simple. As you play through the levels, you learn more about the story about Iris and the world around her through flashbacks than a last minute-ish. The story is interesting, even if there's nothing written or spoken. My only downside for this game was it took me, even while having a bunch of problems with the Rubik's cubes, 3 hours to beat. So it is super short. I would have loved a longer game out of this because it was really good. For $15 on Steam, it's fun, but it's really short. I think the game is worth buying, especially if you like the game contrast, as they have similar puzzle mechanics. I have to slow down when I'm reading, apparently. My only issue with the pricing is it's so short that it makes me a little wary of saying for sure to get it at full price. So I'll say get it when it's like $10 on sale. I feel more like accepting of the price for really short games, but yeah, totally get it eventually. It was cute and kind of bittersweet, and I think it would be enjoyable to most audiences.
Nice.
So there we go.
And to be fair, I have done a lot of shit even as an adult in an effort to catch a black cat.
Yeah. And you're still trying with Predator.
Predator wants to come live with me. That's why he meows all the time. You know, it's funny because I think I mentioned on the show back when we got Raven that he just meowed all the fucking time and I didn't know how to handle it. And we've had him now for about a month and a half. And he doesn't do it anymore. Like, he's just settled in and he's happy and he rarely ever meows. Hmm. Yeah.
No, Predator's still annoying.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. I'll teach her how to be a quiet cat.
No,
it's because they're all so fat that they just lay around all day. They don't have the energy to meow anymore. That's what's happened to him. He's just adjusted to being a fat house cat now.
Oh, God. I wish Predator would do that, but she's insane. Anyway, that is it for this episode. It's been a long one. We thank you for putting up with us and listening to the whole thing if you made it this far. Game
it's
awards
a lot of
were
fun
crazy.
To talk about those things, though.
Yeah, it's fun to go through them. Although I think we could have made it a bit shorter.
Nope, I had opinions. Opinions always have to be voiced. I had more opinions. I just started to like speedrun mode it because my kids will be home in literally a minute.
Well, then, since you only have a minute left, tell me, do you have any final words?
Do dumb things for black cats.